Hello, and welcome to Runway Girl Network in Conversation, a deep dive into aviation and the passenger experience. I'm RGN Deputy Editor John Walton, and today I'm in conversation with John Morris, founder of WheelchairTravel.org. This episode, we're talking about travellers with disabilities, how airlines are serving them, and how the industry can improve. But first, thanks to our sponsor. In Conversation is brought to you by Bolteron, a Simona company, purveyor of high-performance thermoplastics for tomorrow's aircraft interiors. With new and groundbreaking innovations in design capabilities, Bolteron offers airlines the ability to customize the cabin with lightweight materials, with metallic effects, translucent decorative panels with unique embedded patterns, dynamic textures, vibrant pearlescence, and much more. Learn more at boltaron.com. Now, John, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here with you.
So first off, tell us a little bit about how WheelchairTravel.org came about.
Sure. I have a disability. I use a wheelchair. And as I began traveling the world with my wheelchair, I realized that there was a lack of information about accessible travel. So I saw an opportunity to create a website and began sharing a little bit about what I was learning flying all over the world. And it's really grown, I think, in part because of the incredible demand that people with disabilities are showing in experiencing travel vacations.
Absolutely. And of course, it's not just vacations, it's business travel as well. And what I found really interesting reading through wheelchairtravel.org is that quite a lot of the newer seats that we see are actually, especially in business class, are not especially accessible. I mean, I understand that you had some issues recently with the Qatar Airways Q Suite. Is that right?
That's right. I have only very recently flown Q Suites for the first time, and unfortunately it did not impress from an accessibility standpoint. One of the interesting things I found was that the seats that the airline has listed on its own seat map as being the accessible ones are actually the least accessible of the seat offerings. The seat is blocked entirely by an immovable wall. And there's no way to transfer a passenger from the aisle chair to the seat itself using the full lift method, which is taught to all of the assistance contractors here in the United States and around the world.
I see. So how do you get around that? What was the solution?
Well, you know, I am much more capable physically in adjusting myself, I think, than the majority of my readers. I am just a triple amputee and maintain, you know, control of all parts of my body, whereas many of my readers are suffering from other conditions such as paralysis, where they don't quite have the control that I might. And so transferring into the seat was a little easier for me than I think for the typical wheelchair user.
Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. Let's take a step back. When you're preparing to travel as a wheelchair user, what are some of the things that you have to take into account in your planning process that able-bodied travelers might not necessarily need to take into account?
Well, if I back this out even beyond aviation, every aspect of the travel experience has to be planned, from, you know, how I'm getting to the airport, the hotel that I'm staying in, what my options will be for accessible ground transportation, the types of activities that will be accessible, will the hotel room meet my needs? All of these things are considerations for a person with a disability who would like to travel that may not require a whole lot of thought by, you know, my able-bodied friends or peers who can just go online and book any hotel and call up an Uber, to get around or to a meeting. So there's quite a bit more that goes into making sure that every aspect of the travel ribbon, so to speak, will be wheelchair accessible.
Okay, yeah. And You know, one of the things that I'm seeing a lot is that there are some very strong thoughts about ride-hailing services like Uber and Lyft, which in some ways do offer accessible options, but in some ways are not required to do so. Is that correct?
Well, there's quite a bit of a debate as to whether or not here in the United States, Uber and Lyft are transportation companies or technology companies. And so that would play a very important factor into whether or not, the services would be required to provide wheelchair accessible vehicles. But there has been some good news in cities like Washington, D.C., I've been able to find quite a bit of wheelchair-accessible Uber vehicles to get around. And so that's extremely welcome. Taxis are one of the biggest challenges that people with disabilities face, not just travelers, but people living in their local communities.
Absolutely. Now, when you book a ticket, what are some of the things that you need to do in addition or differently to an able-bodied passenger? Can you use the same website booking path, or do they shunt you off into please telephone for your needs? Or does it vary between all the airlines?
It definitely varies by the airline. I think my number one airline is American Airlines, and they've made it very easy to request special assistance services during the booking process. They also follow up with a call to the passenger to confirm their needs and provide additional information, which I think is incredibly valuable and a good example for other airlines to follow.
What specifically is it that American does differently to those other airlines? Is it the easy booking side of things? Is it the follow-up phone call?
Well, I think the follow-up phone call is indeed rare. It's not something I've experienced on too many other carriers, but American follows that practice religiously, I would say. It's very rare in all of my bookings for me to fail to receive one of these calls. Some of the information that's discussed is actually quite important, such as the dimensions of the cargo hold to accommodate power wheelchairs, such as the one that I use. Many travelers are not aware of these limitations and constraints, so it's very helpful for them to be given that information in advance of travel.
Absolutely. So, okay, so you've booked your flight, you've got to the airport. What does your journey through the airport look like in terms of an experience?
Well, you know, I am a very frequent flyer, so I've sort of gotten this down to a science. If you recall the Up in the Air movie and the ways that Ryan Bingham made it through the airport in security, that's very much what my experience looks like. Of course, I have, I benefit from services such as TSA PreCheck, which really speeds up the screening experience, allows me to keep things in my bag and get through with an expedited personal screening and screening of my own wheelchair. But I think the average traveler, depending on their disability, may be connecting with an assistance staff member right at the check-in station. And so these experiences in airport security and getting to the gate and through check-in and all of these things vary based on the individual's own physical abilities and special assistance needs.
I see. If you were trying to explain the best of all world outcome for a disabled passenger versus the worst of all world outcome, especially at the airport and sort of between check-in, security, and getting to the gate, what are some of the range of experiences that people commonly have?
Well, I think that one of the biggest challenges that airlines are facing right now is this incredible growth in the amount of people with disabilities who are traveling and availing themselves of the special assistance services that are designed to sort of level the playing field, so to speak, in air travel, making it accessible to everyone. So one of the things that I hear about commonly, and also experience myself during the boarding process, for example, is staff just not being available to provide that special assistance because they're all busy and attached at that moment to other passengers who are, going through their journey at the airport. So there's quite a bit of demand for this accessible services. And in a lot of cases, people are having to wait extended periods of time in order to take advantage of it.
Yes, I was speaking with a fellow journalist who occasionally needs wheelchair assistance. She has a joint condition, which means that sometimes she's able to walk and sometimes not. And she has a lot of criticism in terms of the way that she'll often be just dumped at the gate hours in advance of her flight with no option of, for example, going to a lounge if she has lounge access. Is that something that you experience as well?
Well, I travel with my own power wheelchair, so I am able to maintain my independence throughout the journey. But in some airports, I'll have difficulty getting my own wheelchair returned to me. I sort of had an experience like this just a few weeks ago in Chile, where my wheelchair was not returned to me during a five-hour layover. And so I was, at the mercy of the assistance staff who essentially pushed me to the lounge and left me there until my flight. That's not a good experience for everyone. In the U.S., we say that no passenger should be left unattended for more than 30 minutes. And I think that while that's a great standard, it's not always adhered to. And passengers are left behind with nowhere to go. And that's a real challenge and can detract from the travel experience.
Yeah, I guess so. So you roll away through security in your powered chair, get yourself to the gate. At what point does the airline take control of your wheelchair, and how do they treat it? What's the process there?
Sure. Well, my wheelchair is very heavy. It weighs 400 pounds, so it's a significant piece of equipment. I turn it over at the door of the aircraft, so I roll it down to the jet bridge where I transfer into the aisle chair to board the aircraft. At that point, my wheelchair is taken down to the ramp, depending on the aircraft type, either loaded directly into the cargo hold or placed into a cargo container for safekeeping. Then hopefully, if everything goes well, I'll be reconnected with it at the arrival airport with the wheelchair being in the same condition in which I turned it over. Of course, that doesn't always happen.
So what are some of the things that can happen to a wheelchair in flight? Is it it's not secured properly, so it gets shaken around?
Absolutely. Also, training in the way that wheelchairs are handled in the loading process itself or removing it from the cargo hold. I've seen wheelchairs, my own included, being tipped on their backs and sides, dropped. I've had one wheelchair totaled in all of my flights over these past 6 years as a wheelchair traveler. These devices they're very critical in the mobility and independence of people with disabilities. And so when they're damaged, not only will, the passenger have to dedicate some time and effort to seeing through the repairs, but it also could restrict their mobility, for the coming days or weeks in some cases.
So you're there at the jetway. Do you transfer then to an aisle chair to be taken on board the aircraft? Is that how that works?
I do. The aisle chair is not comfortable, but it's an absolute necessity at this point in terms of getting on the aircraft in an accessible manner.
Okay, and so do you find that so the armchair goes with you onto the aircraft and remains on the aircraft? Does it? Is that correct?
So typically the aisle chair is provided for boarding by the airport itself. Certain aircraft have an onboard aisle chair that is stored on the aircraft. That would only be utilized in the case of needing to go to the lavatory during the course of the flight. But generally, it's the airport's equipment that is used during the boarding process.
Okay, I see. And is it correct that in terms of using the lavatory, the only aircraft required to have a lavatory accessible by disabled people are the wide-body aircraft?
That is correct. And that, I think, is one of my greatest criticisms of air travel. Because narrow-body aircraft are being used on longer flights every day. I've flown across the Atlantic to Europe from the U.S. On a 737 MAX 8, but I also fly cross-country pretty frequently on narrow-body aircraft. So 6-7 hours. Of time spent without access to a bathroom is pretty significant. Of course, that happens. We measure that by the flight time, but also, the time that I've been away from the toilet in pre-boarding the aircraft and then waiting for assistance on arrival. So these periods of time without access to an accessible toilet can be quite excessive.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're quite right. We keep seeing, with the A320neo and 737 MAX families, these narrow-body aircraft really turning into long-haul flight machines. And so that's something to really for the industry to look at, I think. What's your take on convertible lavatories, such as Airbus's SpaceFlex, where two small lavs at the rear of the aircraft can be converted into one that is at least marked for people with reduced mobility?
Sure. Well, I think there are two versions right now of SpaceFlex, version 1 and version 2. I think version 1 is great, but version 2 is really, I think, an accident waiting to happen because it uses a tip-up transfer seat to aid the passenger in getting from the aisle chair to the toilet. I don't think that that's particularly safe. It's not something that I would personally like to try. But version 1 is much more accessible in that it allows a direct transfer from the aisle chair to the toilet in the lavatory. And I think that is very important. Of course, these convertible lavatories have existed for many years, and in fact, many of the accessible lavatories used on wide-body aircraft are actually convertible in that they combine two standard-size lavatories into a larger space by collapsing, for instance, the wall between these two lavatories to double the space and double the number of toilets. But to provide that necessary room for a person to maneuver in the aisle chair and also to be able to get assistance from, their travel companion or care assistant. So I think, anything that we can do to improve the accessibility of the lavatory on airplanes is a positive step forward. But I'd like to make sure that the options that we're using have the adequate amount of space and allow for a safe transfer of the individual to the toilet.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting. I hadn't quite appreciated the issues that tip-up seat could cause. So have you taken a look at any of the other options that have been proposed? For example, the Bombardier C series there, the Airbus A220's rear lavatory, which is also billed as PRM capable. Is that something that you've experienced yourself?
So I have not flown on the aircraft yet. I hope to. But based on the photographs that I've seen and the descriptions and measurements, it looks to be a positive step forward. Ideally, the transfer space would allow, you know, the individual to pull up directly alongside the toilet and perform a side-to-side transfer to the toilet. That's not possible with the A220's toilet, but it's still much more accessible than, for instance, SpaceFlex version 2. So, you know, I think it's a great development. Certainly, we haven't seen an accessible lavatory on an aircraft so small before, you know, I really applaud that direction that Airbus and Bombardier and the airlines who are installing it are taking.
Yeah, no, me too. I was interested to see last year at the Farnborough Air Show that Bombardier is also advertising PRM accessible lavatories in the smaller CRJ series. That's something that I think sounds like a real benefit for people who are using those smaller aircraft.
Right. I think in the next week I'll be on two CRJs, so I would welcome that as well. But, you know, I'm starting now to see, you know, in the U.S. market, CRJs used on flights of about 3 hours. And of course, that's a significant amount of time where, you know, I see so many other able-bodied passengers taking advantage of the lavatory. And so I think that people with disabilities should have that opportunity as well.
No, absolutely. How does boarding and deboarding work with a powered wheelchair for something like a CRJ, which might not be on a jet bridge?
So there are a couple different ways. In some cases, there are very long ramps that are used to access the aircraft. There are also in cases where stairs are used for able-bodied passengers, there is a lift that lifts the passenger in the aisle chair up to the door of the aircraft. And, of course, this also happens stair boarding with much larger aircraft at airports all around the world. You know, perhaps you're on a 777 and, you know, get a remote gate at London Heathrow. And so in that case, ambulifts, which are essentially catering trucks with a wheelchair lift on them, are used to help people with disabilities get off of the aircraft or board it in a barrier-free manner.
Okay, I see. So so how does that work? Does the truck pull up to a gate in the airport, or is it does the ambulift mean that you are taken down to ground level and then put onto the truck and then disgorged from the truck onto the aircraft? How does that? What's the
right? Impact? Right. So it's the latter. Typically, depending on the airport, the passenger is led down to the ramp level. You know, you take an elevator down and board the truck using a lift up from ground level to the truck itself, and then ride the truck to the plane like a catering truck. The ambulift will adjust its height to be level typically with door 1R or 2R. And the passenger will then be led into the aircraft.
Okay. And just out of interest, is that the same for an A380? Would you be lifted up to the second level of an A380? Is that how that would work?
So I have never used an ambulift to board an A380. In fact, one time, my very first flight on the A380 was with China Southern from Amsterdam to Beijing, and the aircraft was parked at a gate not optimized for the A380, and there was no way to get me to the second level of the aircraft. So I can't be certain whether or not there was an ambulift capable of accessing the A380 at Amsterdam, but I'm fairly certain that these types of vehicles do exist somewhere.
Right, but again, it's as you were saying earlier, it's a matter of them being there at the right time for each passenger. Thinking about the different ways in which airlines get passengers with disabilities onto the aircraft, and without wanting to ask you to pass judgment on behalf of all wheelchair users everywhere, because of course there will be many, many individual differences in passenger needs and requirements, is there one way that's better or worse than another for people with disabilities? What would be your ideal way of boarding and disboarding the aircraft?
Well, I think that all of these technologies that are in use have a place somewhere at every airport. Obviously, if I'm boarding a CRJ, which I'll do later tonight, there are many aircraft or many airports where jet bridges are not available for all of the smaller aircraft types. And so I think that in those cases, we should employ ramps. In the case of major aircraft like a 737 or A330, for instance, the jet bridge, I think, is the most dignified way to board the aircraft because the passenger can take their own personal wheelchair directly to the door of the aircraft and access it using the aisle chair. But there are also cases where the ambulift is necessary in airports where jet bridges are not available or remote gates are a necessity. So I think that all of these technologies have a role to play. But at the same time, you know, when I arrive, say, into Miami Airport and have a jet bridge to use, I think that an ambulift might also be helpful in more quickly returning my wheelchair. It can be used to bring the gate-checked wheelchair directly up to the aircraft. So there are many different use cases for all of this technology that should be considered. And I think that an airport that is truly accessible to people with disabilities will have all of these technologies available so that the needs of the passenger and also of the airline can be taken into account.
And are they? I mean, if you say, for example, if you are aware that a jet bridge is likely to be used and that, you know, on the other end, it would be more convenient or faster if there was an ambulift to bring your personal chair up from the, you know, I'm assuming that they bring the ambulift round, they wheel the chair out from the cargo zone and put it straight on and it goes straight up to a door on the right-hand side of the aircraft. Do you have any way of making that happen as a disabled passenger, or do you just have to sort of hit and hope with the airlines?
Well, you know, I've learned to, you know, I always request what I want, and I feel like I rarely get it. So in that sense, I think people with disabilities don't have the ability to make demands of an airline or of an airport to provision services for them in a certain way. But I think that, you know, making suggestions sometimes can work out. I think a very good example of sort of an airport that can or has the ability to do what is best for the passenger is London Heathrow, where I connect through and fly to quite a bit. For instance, if I'm flying in from New York on an international flight, I'll have to make my way to immigration, and clear that to enter the UK. But oftentimes, the path through the airport to immigration can be incredibly lengthy. So whether a passenger is rolling themselves in their own manual wheelchair, or power wheelchair, or being used or assisted to immigration and customs by a staff member, that can be a very lengthy process. So what's often happened on my arrival, even at a jet bridge gate at London Heathrow, is that an ambulift has also been provisioned to, one, more quickly connect me with my wheelchair that traveled in the cargo hold, and then also to expedite my arrival at immigration. Riding the ambulift around the airport to the appropriate entry point closest to immigration is much more efficient and faster than rolling through the lengths of the airport. And so I think that while there is a lot of criticism of the treatment of passengers with disabilities at Heathrow, there's still so many examples of them doing the right thing as well. I think it's always possible to prioritize the needs of the passenger.
Yeah, absolutely. Does that normally happen at Terminal 3 for you, or is it more Terminal 5 or Terminal 2, or what's the terminals that you're normally using there?
So I am primarily my experience with Heathrow has been 3 and 5, but I've also used 4 on occasion. It just really depends. Obviously now I'm primarily Oneworld, but there was a time when I was a SkyTeam flyer, so that changed things up quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's return to the onboard experience. We were talking earlier about good seats versus bad seats, especially on the business class side of things. What are some of the products that you find are particularly good versus particularly bad in terms of providing the accessibility that you need in order to transfer to and from the aisle chair to your seat?
So I self-transfer from the aisle chair to my seat in nearly all cases. And so my favorite business class seat design is the reverse herringbone, because I think it provides a little bit of privacy, and it's also fairly easy for me to transfer into under my own power, and it has direct aisle access, so I don't have to contend with other passengers. But at the same time, a lot of my readers who are lifted into their seats with the assistance of airport contractors or airline assistance teams find the reverse herringbone to be very inaccessible, in that the shell that goes around the seat and provides passengers with a little bit of privacy can also be a barrier in executing that safe transfer. One of the seat designs, and I'm embarrassed that I don't know the name or manufacturer of this seat, but we know that Qatar is replacing their business class seats with Q suites across the fleet, and the seat in a 2-2-2 configuration that has existed on their 777s is one of the most highly rated seats for accessibility among my readers, because it provides an opportunity for a safe lateral transfer from the aisle chair into the seat with no barriers, no suite doors, walls, shell to contend with. It's just a side-to-side transfer whether you're being lifted or doing it on your own, it's an incredibly accessible experience. And of course, you sacrifice direct aisle access in some cases, for instance, if you have a window seat. But I really think that, that seat design is the most accessible that I've seen to this point.
Yeah, that's the Rockwell Collins, I'm sorry, the Collins Aerospace minipod seat. And that is, as you say, it's one of the ones that is falling from use because of its lack of directile access. But in terms of, you know, obviously we have designers and airlines listening to this. So the lateral side-to-side access is important. Is that a general rule?
Well, you know, it's I think it's very important because it allows a passenger to transfer safely. It also allows the assistance teams to execute a lift transfer safely. These transfers where someone is being lifted from the aisle chair into their seat occurs with an individual placing their arms underneath the arms of the passenger and someone in the front lifting from beneath the legs. And so seats that are in even a reverse herringbone design make it very difficult for the assistance teams to maintain a safe hold of the passenger who they're attempting to transfer. And then, of course, Q suites. I really think that such a transfer would just be impossible. I don't see anywhere any way that transfer could be executed in that seat design. And quite frankly, I'm just surprised that more thought was not put into accessibility there.
Interesting. Have you had experience with some of the staggered products? So the Thomson Vantage style product, Thomson Vantage, Vantage XL, the Sky Lounge, the Saffron seats, formerly Zodiac Sky Lounge that Emirates uses on its A380s, the Stelia Solstice, that kind of thing where you have some seats that are closer to the aisle, which are, you know, often billed as the ones that are accessible, and then there are some that are over the sort of footwell from the aisle.
Right. It's a very common seat design going back many years, for instance, on the 767s. And I found that seat as well to be very accessible in allowing for a safe transfer in most cases. Of course, the footwell and the seat in front reduces some of the space that staff have to work in executing that transfer, and it's something that's not a problem on those seats on the old Qatar 777 seat. I've also found it on other carriers as well, most recently LATAM on their 787. But yeah, I think it's certainly an improvement for accessibility over seats that are angled in some fashion. And then, of course, we also haven't talked about the standard herringbone seats, which are still flying on quite a few airlines and which don't really offer any way for passengers to safely transfer.
Yeah, the sort of the old Delta 777, the Virgin Atlantics, the old Air Canada style of seats, because the seat is so far away from the aisle that it's the manoeuvring is complex there. Yeah, John, this has been really fascinating because obviously we talk quite a lot about the increasing densification of a lot of cabins. To your mind, what's as a frequent flyer and as somebody who travels frequently with disabilities, what should airlines be doing here? Is it that they need to ensure that do they just need to take more thought when designing out things like fixed privacy shells? Is it about making sure that perhaps one row of the seats, in the same way that one row is a bassinet row, one row is a row without barriers, that kind of thing? What are the best options here?
Well, I think that I'll use Q Suites again as an example. I think that there was a real opportunity for them to, at least in a number of seats, to provide a feature for the wall to be able to be folded away or removed temporarily to allow a passenger to transfer into the seat. I really, quite frankly, when I got on the aircraft and I spoke with all of the crew who had been working now with Q Suites for many months, that there was no such feature. And that really shocked me. I think that there are a few things that passengers with disabilities are looking for, and particularly passengers with disabilities who use wheelchairs for their mobility. They want seats that are easy to transfer into, accessible lavatories, movable armrests at the aisle of seats, wider aisles. All of these things contribute to the accessibility of the aircraft cabin. And I think that many of these things can be provided without much sacrifice in the way of density. There are new technologies that are coming out. Accessible lavatories, as we've seen, are fitting in smaller and smaller spaces. And there are also many accessible seating options on the market as well. So I don't think that it has to be an either or in the sense of creating an accessible environment for disabled passengers or maintaining the airline's bottom line. In fact, I reject that idea wholeheartedly.
Yeah, interesting. John, thank you so much for joining us today. That is it for today's conversation. Listeners, we certainly hope you enjoyed it, and we're always keen to find out what you think. Please feel free to email me at john@runmygirlnetwork.com with any suggestions. Thanks also to our guest, John Morris. John, tell us where folks can find you online.
You can find me at wheelchairtravel.org, and all of my Facebook, Twitter, Instagram is linked from there. So check out my site.
Fantastic. And as ever, you can find me on Twitter at @thatjohn, everything from RGN on Twitter at @runwaygirl, and of course at runwaygirlnetwork.com. If you're enjoying these conversations, please leave a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks for listening.